What's the 411 with Sharon K, 88.1 FM WFSK.
Oh, yes, oh, yes. Let me say good afternoon to Nashville. Isn't it lovely? Isn't it lovely, Nashville? Oh, yes, it's lovely. Humidity down and everything. We could get so spoiled. Yeah, I just think so. You know, I do. I love it, and I wish it would stay, but I don't know, it's not looking like it. At least we did get a break from this terrible heat wave we had last week, and a break from all the rain and stuff. Anyway, I'm so happy to have you with us this afternoon to take the drive on into the driveway, into the house with you. We're happy to share some time until 6 o'clock. Got a lot in store today. Commander Chuck will be passing along his traffic information here in just a very few minutes, and catch up with him and see what is exactly happening in the realm of traffic. I know it's probably moving slow in the same spots as it always does, so it's almost like he could record it one time and we could play it every day. The morning and the afternoon are identical every day. Anyway, knowing that that's the case, X, how you doing today?
I'm excellent. And yourself?
Well, I'm still superbly superb. You know, I can't think of anything else, you know, to describe myself today. I won't say I wish and I won't, because I'm glad. And that's, you know, a place to be, is glad sometime. Anyway, early voting, busy.
Yeah, that's
polls
right.
Are
you
busy.
Went today, right?
I did. And, I wasn't like thinking in my news head that don't do it on the morning of the Mueller hearings.
Okay.
So it's like, oh, I'm going to tear myself away. Yeah. Oh, Lord. And it was hard to tear myself away as they first started this morning, you know, and
yeah,
then knowing. But the polling places, I think pretty much is kind of sort of brisk.
Okay.
I mean, you know. I saw a steady flow of people at my place and where I go early vote, and I hope they never do away with early voting.
I know.
You know?
That's ridiculous
and
if they do.
Don't, and then they start that mess in Tennessee, y'all need to squawk about it and know that it's one of those kind of opportunities to shut you out of the vote anyway. How'd you like the new paper thing?
I think it was long overdue. Longer
yeah.
Ado.
Well, I like to have had a receipt.
Yeah.
That's what I saw in the missing in the process.
Yeah, so that I could walk out the door.
Yeah,
with
something. You don't just get it. Give me one.
Yeah.
Remember Mr. Gibbs with the True Vote machine?
That's right.
His had a receipt.
That's right.
For the people.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I said that to the lady on the way out the door, she said, well, you got your sticker. I'm like, I know, thank you. That's about all you get.
Yeah.
So maybe when they upgrade this system and all that kind of stuff.
I'd like to know whose idea was not to give constituents a receipt of how they voted, because I'm sure someone made that recommendation when they were voting.
Well, maybe
for this.
That wasn't in the protocol. I mean, maybe that company had not gone to that level yet, because everything is stepping up to different levels, you know. You know, 10 years ago, or maybe even last year, you wouldn't have thought of that about the paper portion.
I've always felt like.
Well,
not, the person
you,
who voted.
You felt it, but yeah. You didn't make the machine, okay? Because that feeling has been going on for a long time.
But it made sense to do that a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, in those states where they had the
hanging chads.
Yes. So we have hanging pieces of paper in
back
Tennessee.
Back then, they should have done that. So, yeah.
Well, I guess I need to do a little more research and homework on this subject of where all them reams of paper are going.
Someone's office to be destroyed, of course.
Shredded, you think?
Yeah. Once they check it and make sure that everything matches and all that.
Well, I hope we don't have a computer failure, a corruption of the software, or hacking, which is entirely possible in today's realm, but it just doesn't seem to bother
some people.
Yeah. Bothers me.
As long as it helps them.
Right. That's why I said, give me my receipt. Like, I went and got the groceries. I was ready, you know. But did you read the amendments, or you just breezed through them?
I read through them. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. I would have rather had it on a piece of paper. You know, I had to keep going back and forth.
Trying to see.
Yeah, remember.
Hit back screen.
Yeah, a bunch. And anyway, so that experience was different for a lot of people because, you know, our machines... there's been this change and upgrade and all that, so we'll see if that's going to make any difference or not. But I saw, you know, mostly the people that I saw during the time that I was in the realm, in that voting realm, were the grown people. I didn't see hardly anybody look like under age 30.
Yeah.
Everybody looked like they were older than 30. Do the under 30s know that all politics are local?
I guess it depends on where you live.
Okay. You think?
Yeah, I'm sure they know.
Well, question I don't know.
The question is, do they care?
Well, so that's connected to action.
There you go. What's in it for me?
Well.
And are the candidates speaking to them? Is there anything in the city for
them?
Well,
maybe it's they don't know how important it is to their, you know, up close and personal lives.
It depends on what you're doing in your 30s. Where are you in life? That normally determines if a person is astute in voting normally.
Well, or, you know, involved in anything, you know, of substance or paying taxes or dealing with debt and responsibility or things of that nature, or being a parent. Because that, you know, that really has a tendency to change. For some, it changes everything. For others, you know, they just breeze in and breeze out. Did you watch any of the hearings today?
I tried to catch some of it here and there.
Yeah. Because I'm certain that, you know, Robert Mueller stuck to the report a lot.
Yeah.
But I just wish that he could just cut loose and say, you know, what he really wanted to say from sometime a few of his expressions or his responses. Mm-hmm. It seemed as though he really wanted to say stuff.
Yeah.
But being the kind of person that he is.
I still think that impeachment is necessary. I just don't see how, even after today, that you don't restart those proceedings.
Well,
that's what part of the mandate was, to put a check on him. And it's not more so for President Trump per se, but it is what my fear is, what happened, now that this precedent has been set, if you don't impeach, if you don't start the hearings, then what you do is you push the envelope for the next person who takes the Oval Office in, you know, 10 years, 20 years, and it creates an atmosphere of chaos.
Well,
because that's what the presidency is based upon. What do my predecessors do?
And it looks as though anything they wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obvious.
And he's stripped the power away from, so it's becoming tribal. The Republican Party refuses to put him in check or balance. What happens when the shoe is on the other foot? And so it keeps going tit for tat. There's no balance of power.
There won't be that.
Mm-hmm.
It won't. And because they will get the amnesia thing. You know, that's going to hit like, you know, all these things. You know, all this stuff about send them back and the president's perfect and he's flawless and, you know, life is good and all that. So the moment the shoe gets up on the other foot, it's amazing how things turn out. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So when a Democrat becomes the next president, all bets are off.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we've just gone through,
that's the problem,
is going to be rescinded. Oh,
that's the problem.
Y'all was lying. We didn't do that.
The next person,
you know, that's what's going to happen.
The next person that is in the Oval Office, especially if they're younger,
they're going to have to release their taxes.
They look back at.
They're not going to have family running the show and flying around on taxpayer expense. Now, you aren't old enough to remember this. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm about to go straight old school. Mm-hmm. Why do I do that? Because I'm grown. When Jimmy Carter was running for president.
Okay.
And he had his family had a peanut farm.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans railed against that peanut farm. And it was just a travesty and it's crying shame. And they're going to cheat and it went on and on and on. His brother Billy couldn't sell the Billy beer. Because they were going to be making money off the government. And how dare you, the same people, okay, today have just Rip Van Winkle their way all the way through everything. And you know he had to sell the farm.
Yeah.
And Billy had to stop that beer and stop selling it, Billy beer. He didn't stop drinking it, but he had to stop selling it.
Yeah.
Because he was going to be cashing in on the presidency. Everybody in that family was going to be cashing in on the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
That has not even come up on the other side.
Because
it's perfectly acceptable.
And that's the problem.
To cash in on the presidency.
Because you keep pushing the envelope to the degree where now the presidency has become, you know, well, you let Donald Trump do it.
It's a casino wheel of whatever you want to do.
So if I'm a millionaire, I don't have to release my taxes if I get elected. I don't have to divulge myself of my assets. And so I can
spin the wheel.
Same thing.
You know, like they do on the Wheel of Fortune, where and every area where it's marked and stopped like a roulette wheel, there's something different on there. That would be this stuff that's been going on with this man.
Yeah.
Former special counsel Robert Mueller has finished testifying before Congress. Mueller testified before two committees today for more than 6 hours on his 448-page report on Russian interference in the 2016 election. Mueller said the interference was not a hoax and it was not an isolated episode. He warned that there should be a more robust effort to guard against future interference. Please, y'all, guard against it, please. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff said the Democratic investigations will continue. Mueller answered more questions in short sentences, referring Congress members to his report and choosing not to read his report out loud. Mueller had made clear in his report that he could not exonerate President Donald Trump on obstruction of justice in the probe. So there's that. But investigators didn't find sufficient evidence to establish charges of criminal conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia. They didn't find it because they didn't search long enough.
Just as important, you know, Mueller was being blocked. You know, the criminal justice department system has been used to help and aid the president in blocking prosecution and exposure of crimes and things of that nature. Yeah. So that's also playing a role in all this. That's why you have to impeach him, because you have to uncover all that stuff. You can't allow him to just get away with this huge amount of obstruction. He's still obstructing justice.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see what's on the roulette wheel as time progresses. But anyway, coming up here in a few moments on the show, it's the new book that discusses the myth one section of it discusses rather the myth of the post-racial America, and everybody knows that is a myth and ain't no such a thing. The book is The Long Southern Strategy, How Chasing White Voters in the South Changed Politics. Well, here we sit in the South. So as we well know, we'll be discussing that at length here shortly with the authors, the co-authors. Now, I would say that normally on a day like this, that knowing the Wednesday afternoon is the hump in the day, or the hump in the week day, and I usually hear a helicopter about this time, and Chuck is giving us a report telling us that this time 20 years ago, it was all clear going out of Nashville, but now, 20 years later into the future, he is still Wednesday at 4:20 telling us that it's not that day anymore. Those days are long gone and it's jammed up as usual. Right, Chuck?
Welcome to Atlanta. I mean Nashville or something like that.
Oh, man, this would be hot Nashville instead of hot Atlanta, hot Nashville.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, all the tourists and stuff, are they a lot of them gone? Are they still
the tourists?
I
was downtown today, and it was pretty crowded with a lot of tourists.
Oh, really?
For some reason. It's weird. You know, some days it seems like a ghost town at times, depending on what time of the day. But, you know, I haven't heard of any big events. Have you, like, going on?
People need time to refill the, you know, stuff. I mean, you know, because it's been a steady flow down there, and, you know, a lot of things are in construction and all that. Is that impacting down there on the riverfront and all that? The hotel, was it the Four Seasons and all? Is that having an impact on downtown traffic, Chuck?
Especially if you're coming down 2nd, you know, how you get off I-40 and you use 2nd and 4th, and it's just a bumpy road all the way down through there until you get to downtown, passing, you know, the Korean Veterans Boulevard, and trying to get into Lower Broadway. Sometimes it's narrow down through there. We were griping about that today. As a matter of fact, we had lunch downtown, and yeah, the construction is frustrating. Look at all the cranes that are up, especially over there on West End. A whole lot of those are going up, it seems like, every day. But right now, Sharon, we're looking at a crash out near the airport. They finally moved it to where it's only blocking one lane now here on 40 eastbound at Donelson Pike. But, wrong place, wrong time, because all the rubberneckers are out in full effect right now, slowing it down here on 40 east between Fessler's and the airport. There's a crash now with injuries at Briley Parkway near Centennial Boulevard. For the last hour and a half, we've had to deal with a pretty big backup west of Nashville because of a crash. A car overturned out there west of town on 40 westbound at the 192. That's out near McCroy Lane. This traffic report brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken, their south location, obviously. They're at 5814 Nolan's Pike. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance. Althea Renee. Her new release is entitled Blossom. Music lovers, don't miss the WFSK Feature Artist of the Week. During the noon hour on Thursdays, you'll hear some prime cuts, an interview with the Artist of the Week, and win some brand new music right here on Jazzy 88 WFSK. We're Nashville's Jazz Station.
Support for WFSK comes from Life Lux Jazz, November 7th through 11th in Los Cabos, Mexico. This year's festival lineup includes Incognito, Kurt Whalum, Gerald Albright, and more. In addition to the music, there will also be health and wellness activities, a Spirit of Jazz brunch, and Sunset Cruise. Information is available at LifeLuxJazz.com. That's LifeLuxe. Jazz.com. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Already Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88. WFSK Historic Fisk University. And I am very happy to have a pair of authors with me, co-authors on the show today, that have never been on with me. And they have a brand new book, The Long Southern Strategy. And let me go back. I don't have my book, so I'm going to have to flip back and forth in these pages online. The Long Southern Strategy, How Southern White Women Drove the GOP to Donald Trump. Now, let me spend a moment reminding the audience that What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. And I know many of you have been watching, some of you have been watching the hearings today, and you're probably, some of you are saturated with politics and things of that nature. But we're going to cover it from a different angle, and happy to have the guests with us today, the co-authors of the brand new book. And Angie, did this book come out? Is today the day, the official day, or yesterday?
Today's the day.
Oh, it's fresh, everybody. This book is fresh. It's fresh. That's right. When I saw the date and the release, I'm like, oh, very timely. The co-authors are political scientists Angie Maxwell and Todd Shields of the University of Arkansas. And we're just happy as can be to have both of you all with us. Hope that you're doing well.
Thank you. We're happy to be here, too.
Now, where in what city is the University of Arkansas located in?
Well, it's in Fayetteville, Arkansas, but we're actually both in Washington, D.C. right now.
Oh, so you're there for all the excitement.
If that's what you want to call it.
Well, let me get both of your takes. Let me start with you, Professor Angie Maxwell, on, your assessment. You're there, and you work as a political scientist, and you've been in this realm, college professor, et cetera, et cetera. You study politics. Can I get some thoughts from you, please?
On what's in, on like kind of our main argument in the book, or like what's going on right now?
Well, now, and then I'm going to lead to the book after I get your thoughts now.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, I was glued to the television as much as I could today, too, to watch, Mueller testify. Mm-hmm. And, one of the things I was really struck by is, during the Watergate hearings, we often used one questioner because it really was about kind of digging into the truth, mm-hmm. right? And what I'm afraid of right now is that, are we searching for truth, or is it just kind of talking points and, posturing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I see that, and I worry about it because we're so polarized now
mm-hmm.
that I wonder who it will convince. I tell my students that I want them to watch multiple news outlets mm-hmm. just to see how one story can be twisted in so many different ways,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they really have a hard time, deciphering what is a credible kind of source. And here we have this opportunity to interview the person who ran this investigation, right? And we've got him hampered by the Justice Department and what they do and do not want him to say, right? They've tied his hands behind his back, and then we've turned it into a lot of, like, little mini speeches, you know, attacking him or trying to get him to say what some soundbite people want him to say. And, you know, I think we're all hedging our bets on that and just kind of glued to the television hoping something, you know, something breaks loose. And what we really need to be doing is registering people to vote.
And concentrating on the facts and the truth. If it could set us free, then what's wrong with that?
Absolutely.
Now, Professor Shields, what's your assessment? I know you all as colleagues get to talk amongst yourselves. So today is like a bonus. This is a bonus for me to have both of y'all, as you know, doing what you do and do it so well, to give your thoughts and assessment. Because to me, it's what you're right on with what you just said, Professor Maxwell.
Well, from my perspective, what we're seeing is some posturing and the polarization that Angie mentioned, and this is really the preparation for the 2020 election. And I think that we're going to see some increasing rhetoric from the Republican Party, particularly like the, you know, send them home type chant.
Right.
And I think a lot of people are a little bit shocked by that, but if they have a chance to look through the long Southern strategy, I think what we're doing is explaining why, at least in terms of the short term, that is a very electoral college-based strategy.
Now, are both of you born and raised in the South, even though you teach in Arkansas?
I am. I'm from Louisiana.
Okay. What about you, Todd?
I am actually from New Jersey, but I got to Arkansas as quick as I could.
Okay. Let me formally introduce my guest today on the show. I'm happy to have Angie Maxwell. She's the director of the Diane D. Blair Center of Southern Politics and Society, an associate professor of political science and holder of the Diane D. Blair Endowed Professorship in Southern Studies at the University of Arkansas. She's also editor of several volumes and the author of The Indicted South, Public Criticism, Southern Inferiority, and the Politics of Whiteness. Which helped her to win a key award for Best Book in Southern Politics. Also co-author Todd Shields. He is the dean of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences and a professor of political science at the University of Arkansas. He is the co-author or co-editor of several books, including The Persuadable Voter, Wedge Issues, in Presidential Campaigns, which won the American Political Science Association's 2009 Robert E. Lane Award for the Best Book in Political Psychology. Now, I'm from Kansas, and you know we call it Arkansas. We do not say Arkansas. We do not do that. So, you know, I'm not going to slip. I'm going to call it what, you know, the folks call it. But I'll just let you know, as a Midwesterner, it's Arkansas to us. Anyway.
Well, you call whatever you like.
Yeah, it's your show.
Now, for both of you, how many changes have you seen happen in, let's say, the last, 10 to 15 years in this Southern strategy that you discuss? And we know the white ladies have always played a part in our politics in this nation anyway.
Yes. Well, you know, the traditional kind of Southern strategy story is the story that after, you know, the 1964 Civil Rights Act passes, that the Republican Party thinks we can capitalize on this kind of white racial angst in the South. We're going to play to it, and we're going to break up what had been a solidly Democratic blue South. And then starts with Barry Goldwater in 1964, and then Richard Nixon continues it, tweaks it a little bit, and then the South is red. Like, that's the story we tell. But it's not true, because in 1976, after Nixon, you know, the South flips back to Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
It goes blue again. Then it flips red to Ronald Reagan. Then it goes, then several southern states go back blue to Bill Clinton. You know, it kind of goes back and forth. And so we started thinking about what else did the Republican Party do? Like, if the South goes back to Jimmy Carter in 76, what did the Republican Party do at that point? And that's when we really started looking at the Equal Rights Amendment. And, you know, both parties had supported the Equal Rights Amendment. It's both first ladies, the former first lady, Betty, you know, Ford, and you had Rosalynn Carter that were at the National Women's Conference in 1977. You know, it was a bipartisan effort. But there was this, you know, kind of growing anti-feminist movement led by Phyllis Schlafly, and Southern white women got really on board with her plans, and they showed up 20,000 strong at a pro-family values, the counter conference that Phyllis Schlafly had. And the Republican Party really took notice. They saw that, and they did a lot of polling, and they realized, we can go get these Southern states if we play the race card, but also if we double down on traditional gender roles, we're going to get a lot of these Southern white women. And that's exactly what they did. They dropped the ERA from their platform all of a sudden in 1980, and they made inroads in the South. And Southern white women did that. I mean, 75, and it affects us today. I mean, 75% of white women in Georgia did not vote for Stacey Abrams. 75%. And we have to know that and recognize that so that we build better coalitions. Because that has been there, and that is not going anywhere. And, you know, we just kind of, there's people that know it, and then it seems like national campaigns and stuff don't kind of pay attention to it enough.
Now, let me ask you, Professor Shields, how much does religion play a part in this? Because, you know, the Southern Baptists and you know, the whole church crowd. Do you discuss that in the book, and what was the strategy involving that?
Sure. Well, and after, you know, Jimmy Carter signified to the Republican Party that they didn't have the whole South and they needed to shore up women, President Bill Clinton showed the GOP that they still hadn't shown up the whole solid South. And when they dove in with data, they realized that there were a lot of evangelicals and Southern Baptists that really did not vote for the Republican candidates. They voted for Bill Clinton. So then there was a very concerted effort to reach out to the Southern Baptist Convention. And at that time, in the late 70s and early 80s, the SBC had gone through a real hostile takeover, and they went very fundamentalist. And so the Republican Party saw another way to reach into what was once solidly Democratic voters in a way not just on race in the 60s and not just on gender in the 80s, but now on religion in the 1990s and early 2000s.
Now, is this the same, Professor Maxwell, is this the same Southern white strategy that helped to get Donald Trump elected? You know, the white ladies overwhelmingly knowing the man was grabbing women's body parts and doing all the crazy stuff, they still were like, oh, but we're fine with that. So that kind of crosses... You know, where's your Baptist teachings?
Oh, yeah, no, this is a great point, right? And we sit here being like, well, these evangelical voters, surely they're going to get offended right?
No,
White evangelicals in the South are Trump's most loyal.
They are.
They give him the highest number of approval, you know, right, white evangelicals. And that's because it is conflated with the racial arguments and the racism that gets promoted by the president in his tweets and policies, right? And so it is a, honestly, I know it sounds crazy, but I remember when the, you know, Republican primary was going on in 2016, and I was talking to some reporter, and they said, well, who do you think is going to win the SEC primaries, like all the southern states on that day? And I said, it's going to be Donald Trump. And they really didn't, but they were like, no, he's from New York. And I said, He's playing the three things. He's playing on racism, mm-hmm. on kind of patriarchy, and he's playing, he's posturing to kind of a Christian nationalism. And when you hit those three things, you get enough of that Southern white vote, because the Republican primaries are winner take all.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all on the same day.
Yeah.
And you get this kind of big boost, right? And
yeah.
so in terms of, specifically in terms of Southern white women, you know, we talk about the gender gap.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done a better job of understanding, mm-hmm. I think, in the national kind of media,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, white women have a much smaller gender gap, or much less likely mm-hmm. to vote for Democrats. It's really women of color
mm-hmm.
who are the hardcore base. But it's even more important that we split it by region,
mm-hmm.
because if you look at white women outside of the South, they voted 52-48 for Hillary Clinton.
Hmm.
It's white women in the South that went 63-37
wow.
for Donald Trump.
Wow. So
it's entirely different.
And going to the break, either one of y'all can jump this on this. How much do you cover the connection to fear? Because that seems to be an overarching theme in a lot of this stuff, is keeping everybody
Absolutely.
full of fear, and you know, and the white lady's full of fear that every person of color is going to rape her or snatch her pocketbook. That kind of reminds mm-hmm. me of that mm-hmm. stuff back in slavery times. So
mm-hmm.
can y'all address this when we come back? Because we need to get our traffic report and stuff, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay,
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Now, see, I should have booked them longer. See, I can already tell. I already know myself. I already know that this is one of those, we got to go into the woods sometime and pull out.
And I know,
see, because when you start with your questions, you're doing four-part comments, questions, and here's how I really feel. And, you know, we ain't got all day. Anyway, we're going to come back with our guest today. And eventually, I'm going to slide this question in about the myth of the post-racial America. Y'all know it was a myth. I just wanted to get your attention. you knew it was when I said it. Anyway, today's book is The Long Southern Strategy, How Chasing White Voters in the South. Right. How Chasing White Voters in the South Changed American Politics. We're taking a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Heavy traffic now trying to get past the airport, 40 eastbound, a wreck out near the airport there, Donaldson Pike, Briley Parkway, Centennial Boulevard on a two-car collision. They're still working that accident, 4400 block at Clarksville Pike, and it's been slow west of Nashville because of that earlier wreck out there on 40 westbound at the 192. This traffic report brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
Support for WFSK comes from AEG Presents.
Grammy Award-winning Herbie Hancock is coming to Nashville August 11th at Ryman Auditorium. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Herbie Hancock, August 11th at the Ryman. Sponsored by Nissan, proud partner of Ryman Auditorium. Produced by AEG Presents.
keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Already Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University, the Long Southern Strategy. And it is long and it does continue. And I am happy to welcome to the show today the co-authors of the new book that just came out today. It's hot and fresh. And that is Angie Maxwell. She's Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Arkansas, as well as Todd Shields. He is the Dean of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences and a Professor of Political Science at the University of Arkansas. Co-authors of the book and probably on book tour as we speak. Don't you all have something scheduled for tonight or last night or something like that?
We actually do. We have a reading and signing tonight at the Politics and Prose at the Union Market here in Washington, D.C.
Well, we got you fresh in Nashville on the air with us right now. So I'm feeling real fortunate today. I really am, because this book is going to be talked about quite a bit. Now, back to I was asking both of you for your opinion on your opinions on fear. And how much you address it in the book, and how much of a role does it play in this Southern strategy?
Oh, it's huge because, you know, we say in there that the Republican Party didn't just go try to win voters in the South. The party really became Southern. It really embraced, like, white Southern, you know, not just attitudes, but its kind of political style. And fear has been a huge part of that. To make people feel like they're constantly being threatened. So what do they do? You know, what does Phyllis Schlafly do on the Equal Rights Amendment? Is she tells, you know, these Southern white women, if it passes, it's going to force you to work. It's going to force you to put your babies in government daycare.
Right.
You know, where it really feels like it's not a choice or it's not, like, incremental. It's going to be, you know, there's a war on Christmas and a war, you know, all everything's a threat, the caravan, right? All of this. And it's to keep your emotions so high that then you vote out of fear.
Right.
Absolutely. 100%.
Okay.
Huge part of it.
Now, what about you, Professor?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the first wave, you have the GOP playing on racial fears of white Americans that their privileges will be taken away.
Right.
You have the switch to white women in the South and their privileges being taken away.
Right.
And then you switch to, you know, Christians and Southern Baptist Convention and their privileges will be taken away. Mm-hmm. And they're all forming around somebody who really doesn't look or act or think like them.
Mm-hmm.
But if he will fight for them, then they will absolutely support him because they're afraid of everything else.
Mm-hmm. Now, does this fear is used, you know, we see it as a black woman, you know, I've been seeing it forever. But do our other cultures, are they just now getting it? Or have they, in the book, do you talk about by race in there, by culture?
Oh.
Do you address it individually? Because I'm, you know, I'm amazed, and I guess I shouldn't be, that, you know, that everybody that, you know, sees the president or hears him making those remarks about the Mexican men are rapists and all this kind of insanity stuff that they keep saying, and everybody, Mexicans are criminal and all that. How come the Mexicans in this country that are legal aren't, like, mad about that? They're not, they ready for those people to go home, and I'm trying to figure that out. Because it's like, it's you they're talking about.
Absolutely.
So how do you address that in your book?
Well, I mean, here's what's interesting. I mean, you know, whiteness as a thing is not a thing, you know? I mean, it only can be defined in opposition to something else. And that's really helpful politically because you can kind of bend it any way you want.
Mm-hmm.
So what was, you know, in the South during certain periods, it was a very exclusive white versus black. Whiteness defined itself in opposition to blackness.
Yes.
But you can take whiteness and define it in opposition to immigrants.
Uh-huh.
You can define it in opposition to Muslims. You can define it in opposition to feminists. You can kind of bend it in any way that you want. And when you look historically, you know, at when did the Ku Klux Klan expand in this country? The 1920s is when it goes everywhere. I mean, Indiana, Ohio, all kinds of places.
Uh-huh.
And you see it crop up, and that's when they expanded to be more nativist, right? Uh-huh. So anti-immigrant, and you see that kind of pick up. So people wonder, well, oh, is this just happening in the South? No. The strategy by the GOP was to build a map to win the big, you know, the electoral college, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was their strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go after those voters. But it doesn't mean that they don't pick up like-minded people all
mm-hmm.
over the country,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't stir that up. And then when you're trying to make it feel like it's a constant threat, you might even manufacture some of it in places
mm-hmm.
that it wasn't before, right?
Mm-hmm.
We see that, too.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, there's someone, you've got some relative living in the middle of Iowa who's all of a sudden really, really terrified about immigration all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Because it's tapping into something that's there already, but it is amplifying it, and that can manufacture it for some people whole cloth. That's why it's so dangerous.
Well, does the Southern strategy, I know with the white privilege and all the stuff that, you know, white people have, and they're still not acknowledging it or even seeming sometimes grateful. But what are other cultures that know good and well? Just like when black folks been catching hell in this country for hundreds of years, and other cultures have come over here and not really felt or not really empathized or even understood it until suddenly the evil eye was turned on them. And now, you know, so I mean, when
it's true, I mean
it really is. And you know, where were y'all when we were getting, you know, all this mess, you know, mistreatment and mess? You weren't saying anything, you weren't complaining. I mean, what is that the power?
No, it's absolutely true. We are awful in this country about not until it's in my backyard do I get, you know, upset. And I will tell you the exception to that.
Uh-huh.
The exception to that is African-American women.
Yes.
Because African-American women have consistently and routinely shown up to vote and turned out the vote, whether it was a candidate that they liked or a candidate they were tolerating for the greater collective good.
Yes.
They have. They have. They
Amen.
Absolutely have. And you can look at math and you can look at the numbers and you can see them do it.
Yes.
And it's when I get super frustrated when I see all the infighting in the Democratic Party right now.
Right.
And I say, we're going to support whoever gets the nomination.
Yes.
Whether it's somebody I can't stand and I hope it's not. Or if it is, because it's not about my personal preference.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
It's about the collective good. And we have to learn that. But that's why I think, you know, these four women of color congresswomen that, you know, the president insulted and said that, you know, demeaning things to, the reason that we should be listening to them is because they should be our leaders, because they have been doing what's good for the collective for generations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They really should. And the rest of us should follow.
Well, as the, you know, I even hate the terminology of the squad. I just think it's three, you know, four empowered ladies. Professor Shields, do you think that they are becoming the new negative, the new be scared, oh my God, these women of color just, you know, they're going to, you know, emasculate you. What are they going to be, the new strategy?
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I don't think that there's any coincidence that, you know, President Trump is saying go back home, and then you have crowds cheering go home, send them home.
Yeah.
I do think that they are a representative of gender and race and religion that really will be threatening. And I'm not surprised.
Right.
Some people have said that they thought that President made a misstep or the president made a mistake. But I'm going, no, this is strategic. This is the long southern strategy. And then they come along, and he's got a perfect example to say, look what's going to happen if you don't vote for me.
Right.
These are the people that are going to take over.
Right.
And it fits into all of those areas.
Yes. Yeah. And they're all and people like that are always crazed, you know, like the Reefer Madness movies, and they're always going to get you, and, you know, they're going to rape you. And I mean, it's all this crazy. It's always da-da-da-da-da. And these,
absolutely.
And people are sitting there, their knees knocking and biting their fingernails. And I'm like, y'all, can't you see you're being fed a pile of garbage? X, go ahead. I know you had something to say.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, it seems to me that the most logical strategy and the thing that, in my opinion, Donald Trump fears the most would be a Biden-Harris ticket. And partially it's a double threat because Joe Biden has the ability to punch back and also dismantle a lot of the fear-mongering and the hate that Donald Trump spews, as well as talk to those same type of voters and sort of reclaim that narrative, because people trust him because he's sort of one of them and can speak to them, as well as galvanize the black vote, because he was at President Obama's side for those 8 years and stood by him. So just in my opinion, I just want to know your thoughts on it, that to me, his biggest fear might be a Biden-Harris ticket.
Well, I mean, if he's looking at any polls, you know, it should be. I mean, anything can happen this early on.
True.
I do think that if Joe Biden gets the nomination, he better pick Kamala Harris or Stacey Abrams, you know, because the Democratic Party needs to recognize what the contribution and who their base is. And it is not Southern white women, you know. It's like important for the party. I mean, it's important to beat him, but the vice presidency is important for party growth and for setting up kind of the future.
Yeah.
And so if it is him, you know, I really hope we see one of those women who deserve to be at the top of the ticket, honestly, you know, in terms of their sheer accomplishment.
Yeah.
But, you know, those things are really hard to predict. And even if you don't see, I mean, it's not the last we're going to see of Kamala Harris or Stacey Abrams. They're the future. And I think that's what Trump fears.
These
people are not going. These excellent candidates are not going anywhere.
Right.
They're young.
Right.
You know? And there's going to continue to be more and more options and more leadership that doesn't look the way leadership has always looked.
Right.
And that scares them, you know?
Right.
And so I'm like, keep it coming. It's not about just one election cycle either. It's about the many election cycles in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
And I don't think we're going back to a place where we do not have better representation running. And that is a good thing. It's going to be hard.
Yeah.
There's a backlash, but it's changing.
Definitely.
Just slow. It's
definitely.
Just long.
It is, but we, you know, we can't get weary and well doing out here, y'all. The fight must continue.
We're not.
The fight must continue. We must, you know, continue on and not let down generations. And lastly, Professor Shields, I know I said in my little tease coming up to promote the show, the myth of post-racial America was what I had picked. And I'm like, this book is so rich that I can't, I mean, it's like y'all just covered a bunch of stuff that, you know, in the Grand Bargain Part 1. Just give us a couple of sentences on that myth so we can put that completely to bed.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is definitely something that is a myth. And if you look at systemic racist, figures of crime and health and birth rates and all of those things, you see that there is massive discrimination that has continued.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a ploy to say, okay, look, after President Obama, this whole problem's over. But at the same time, they're playing the scare tactics of it's maybe not be over because you're going to be attacked and there's going to be immigrants that are going to be coming across and they're criminals. And so those fears are being stirred up as well.
Okay.
And, you know, it starts back with, you know, Ronald Reagan's the one that really pitches, you know, colorblindness, pushing colorblindness. It's time to move past race.
Right.
Well, that was something a lot of Southern white voters wanted to hear.
Right, right.
Because that kind of lets them off the hook.
Yeah.
But what it also does is it says that any government program to help deal with, you know, systemic racism to overcome economic inequities because of racism are just not needed anymore.
Okay.
Or they're somehow discriminatory against whites, or they are, you know, somehow, you know, gonna, you know, aren't necessary and are cost too much money. Right.
Yeah.
All of that denial, right? I think it's pretty obvious.
Yes.
Since in the last 2 or 3 years that we don't live in, you know, a post-racial America, but it's
right.
But what's more important for us is how they use that myth.
Yes.
To then make whites feel
yes.
like they're being discriminated against, or they're being victimized, or, you know, they're going to get a leg up on them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
They use that.
Yeah.
To try to say, oh, no, we're past that.
Yes.
And that's it's very effective and very dangerous.
Yeah, no question. Now, for both of you, see, this for me, I'm just like, that's just part one, y'all. See, and there are so, you know, I'm going in the direction of, I know your schedule and y'all on tour, but can I have you back on the show, please?
Oh, we'd love it.
Oh, we'd love it.
Absolutely. Oh, okay. All right. Cool. Now, see, I'm happy now, because it is this. You all have so much in here, and since I'm sitting, you know, in the belt buckle of the South and all that, and the politics that are so thick you could get them with a shovel, that I just must dig deeper into this subject with both of you all at the height of your careers, and I really appreciate you being with us today to talk about the book. So we're going to call your publicist back and get you back. Is that okay?
That'd be great. We'd love it.
Yeah.
Yay. That'd be wonderful.
Okay, now tell the audience where they can get your schedules and find out, you know, where to get the book and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you can get the book anywhere now. It's at Barnes & Noble. It's at Amazon. You can order it from Oxford University Press. It's the actual publisher. They got the Kindle version and the Nook version ready to go, which is significantly discounted off the hardback. There's going to be a paperback in the future. So it is everywhere now.
Okay.
And you can get it.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you both to political scientists Angie Maxwell and Todd Shields, both of the University of Arkansas. And their new book just out today, The Long Southern Strategy, How Chasing White Women, White Voters, rather, in the South Changed American Politics. We'll be talking again. Thank you so much. You all have a good rest of the day.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Yes, I'm going to have them back on because there's a lot. That we did not have time to get to. So anyway, let's get our news, and then coming back in the next hour, I did see one of the mayoral candidates is here, and Ms. Carol Swain will be in the studio here with me in just a moment for her time on the segment. So you want to be Nashville's next mayor. Let's take a time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.